what all this was about and started to look at the writings that she was taking and recognized, as everyone who recognized and knew Helen, that this was not Helen speaking. Certainly not Helen speaking. This was a totally different voice than the voice of Helen Schuckman. And Bill got interested. And Bill said, "This is powerful stuff you're getting here." And he said, "Maybe I'm to help out in this dictation business." And Bill was an accomplished typist. Didn't take any dictation, but was an accomplished typist. And Bill started doing the typing for Helen. And over a period of 6 years or so, Helen took this dictation at the oddest hours, and it was never uniform. It would come whenever she would open her channels, I suppose, and many, many times when she didn't open her channels. But the dictation came and came and came, and she kept writing and writing and writing. And what is now our present version of The Course in Miracles, and there won't be a sequel, because the one thing we can really depend on is that Jesus got it right this time, is that she put it all down and Bill started typing. Well, here are these two very prominent psychiatrists sitting in New York City, and they got themselves somewhat of a hot potato because they got this now manuscript of some 1,500 pages or so, and they don't know what to do with it. They really don't know what to do with it. And they started asking the voice, "Hey, you told us to take dictation. We took dictation. Now you better send someone forward who will know what to do with this material." And in walks a man who was one of the leading names in the world of parapsychology by the name of Douglas Dean. Now, Douglas Dean was and is a fairly famous guy in that he is the man that introduced Kielian photography to the United States. For the benefit of those of you that don't know what Kielian photography is, it's a science of photography whereby you can take a picture of an animate or an inanimate object and actually see the aura that surrounds both live and dead objects. And it was a process discovered in Russia by a man by the name of Kielian. And Doug was the man who brought it to this country. Now, Doug, being a friend of Helen and Bill, one day comes on the scene, and Helen says, "Doug, we've got something here that we really don't know what to do with. And perhaps you can be of help because it's really a hot potato in our hands and we don't know what we're supposed to do at this point other than to show it to you." And Doug took it and looked at it and he said, "This looks like some of the greatest writings I've ever seen." And I will try and find some people who would know what should be done with it, because I don't know what to do with it either. And hence started that secret tape I mentioned that Paul Steinberg had heard. Doug Dean made this tape and spoke about this piece of work and sent it out to what he considered at that time the world's leading parapsychologists. And when he had heard from Helen and Bill how the dictation had come through, certainly he thought he was dealing with psychic phenomena. Well, I guess that Judy was one of the gals who heard this tape. And Judy, in her own way, had been searching for a long time. Judy was the daughter, is the daughter, of a very Orthodox Jewish man who has held high positions in synagogues in New York, but apparently was never really truly satisfied with where she was in her own life, happily married, successful, well-to-do in every respect of the word, but like all of us here today, searching for something better or that better way. And Judy contacted Doug and said, I'd like to meet these two people. And a secret, quote, secret meeting was arranged to be held during lunch in the lunchroom at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital in New York. The most unlikely place one could think of to have this type of a meeting. Well, they went up there, and you can imagine Judy and Doug sitting with Helen and Bill at a table having lunch, and Helen and Bill trying to keep their voices very low so their colleagues wouldn't hear what they were talking about, and Judy being a kind of boisterous, outgoing person, coming in and saying, "What is this miracle stuff?" Well, of course, they were flabbergasted. And they led Judy and Doug into Bill Thedford's office, locked the doors, and said, "We must talk in private because we don't want anyone to know what we're working on here and what we have, because they'll think we're lunatics, as we thought we were in the very beginning." And Judy took a look at the material, and something in that material touched home with her, and she walked out with that material tucked under her arm and knew, as she was walking out of Columbia Hospital, that she was indeed chosen as the catalyst to get this material out to the world. And that's a pretty heavy assignment for a little Jewish girl from Brooklyn. But that was her assignment, and do what she did. And she took it and ran with it and presented it, certainly to Paul and I, that night we came on the scene. Yes?
How did she go to get in touch with Paul? That's the thing, this thing here.
She didn't. She didn't. Because Paul, the tape, Paul never knew who sent the tape out, and I don't believe that it was Judy who sent the tape in Paul's direction. I really believe that it... Doug had sent it to one of his parapsychology friends, and then they had played it for Paul. Being into parapsychology, that's the way he heard it. So that Judy did not know Paul, certainly did not know me, until we walked into her apartment that night as number 7, 8, and 9. Well, the rest, of course, is somewhat history, except for a couple of things. And that's primarily some of the points I want to cover here today, and certainly would feel remiss in before I leave this lovely room and let you people not share with me in how I utilize this, you know, in my everyday life and everyday business. But you wanted to ask a question. I have no idea. I don't know if the 10th ever showed or not, because when we left, we were number 7, 8, and 9, and whether or not Judy ever saw number 10 is not something that I have any knowledge of. Yes.
Dr. Helen, did you have any children? What was her husband?
No. She had no children, and her husband, who is still here today, was a very gentle soul, very gentle, quite unlike Helen. And he was into books, and at one time had a bookstore, sold books, and was very, very helpful in suggestions, certainly, when we started putting the books together.
What's the foundation?
Okay, well, again, when the books were finally published and printed, obviously a publisher's name had to be put on them. And they kind of did some soul searching as to what to call this organization. And you must understand that it was the foundation's guidance from Jesus never to be structured. In other words, they did not want to be known as a cult. They did not want to be known as a group. And even to this day, in order for anyone to use any of the material from A Course in Miracles, you have to, and I certainly suggest everyone that does want to use material from the Course, to ask for permission from the foundation to use it, because they are the publishers. They give that permission. I've never heard them turn anyone down. And they give it gladly and lovingly, but the foundation is the initial core group of people who I met that day when I went into New York. So that the foundation certainly consisted of Judy and her husband Bob, and Helen, and Bill Thedford, and Ken Wapnick. Yes. Ken is a man who was born Jewish and then decided that he was going to become a priest, converted or semi-converted, and then discovered or had a calling that he was not to be ordained, but was to go and help Helen. And Ken did spend the balance of Helen's days and most of the time almost as a guardian to Helen, certainly as a helper to Helen, and in reality, a good deal of all of the responsibility for getting material out to the world has been given to Ken. And Ken certainly does hear the voice, as a lot of us do. And it pleases me to tell you that we are doing a new book. Ken called me a day or two ago and is coming through with a book on forgiveness, which we probably will have to start typesetting sometime in April and will no doubt complete by the summer. So we will have a new book available, and I don't know whether all of you know it. He is also the author of The Christian Psychology in A Course in Miracles, plus the Glossary Index for A Course in Miracles. And Ken is a really superhuman being and a very beautiful man. And I was privileged to spend a good deal of time when I needed my clarification on Course in Miracles with Ken. And he has probably thought about at this point as the greatest living authority on what the Course in Miracles is really, really saying. He's the most in-tune person as far as Course in Miracles is concerned that I know. And a very beautiful individual. Yes?
When did Helen die? When did she die of? And how? Did she die a Christian or a Jew? Being that she was atheist, as you said. I want to know who was it.
She died about 2 years ago. And she died... I don't know whether she was a Christian or a Jew, to be very honest. There are a lot of people at the funeral, but one of the things that I did hear at the time, and I think it's true, is that Helen was told she was going to die and assisted in her dying to a certain degree because Helen wanted a special deal. She figured that as long as she was the scribe of A Course in Miracles, well, she was entitled to a special deal. And the voice said something really significant to her and said, well, my love, all you have to do is The Course in Miracles. And you need not suffer at all. And so I don't really know, I don't know how important it is, you know, what she died. Obviously that, you know, she could have had the inner peace that we enjoy, but chose not to. And that is something that Course in Miracles offers, is choice. Yes. Cancer. But she was told... or had a vision that she would die and kind of predicted her own death and then more or less made it happen that way. Yes? On my family, it's had a very profound effect in that in living and using and practicing and encompassing A Course in Miracles, our whole lifestyle has changed in a very beautiful, dramatic way. Number one, as I started this afternoon's talk with, I use it totally in my business. And we'll get back into that because it's important. And it's one of the reasons that we're here. I also use it at home. And as far as my family is concerned, they are into A Course in Miracles 100%. And what that gives us is a very harmonious household. We have five people, two men and three women, and we just don't have unpleasant days or evenings. We also work together. All of my family, including my youngest daughter, who still goes to school, work at Coleman and enjoy very much bringing this material to our brothers and sisters. My wife, who is a rather small woman and weighs perhaps 115 or 18 pounds, hauls around sets of eight, which weigh 52 pounds. And she picks these things up like they're feathers and hauls them around. And I've asked her several times, how are you able to do that? Because she's lifting almost half of her body weight. And I've seen men who are certainly stronger who cannot do that or cannot even lift an eight, which contains eight sets of the Course in Miracles. They weigh about 5.5 pounds a set. And she says, well, I get all my energy from the books. And I'll, at this moment, tell you an amusing story. When we were in Florida a couple of years ago, there is a man, one of the men, as a matter of fact, who walked on the moon, Ed Mitchell. And Ed, of course, is an astronaut, and Ed teaching Course in Miracles in Palm Beach, Florida. And I went in, and we introduced ourselves, and Ed was really happy to see us. And I wanted my family to meet, you know, one of the men who walked on the moon. There haven't been all that many, I don't think. And Ed looked at Judy and said, "You're the gal I've heard about that lifts those eights of 50 pounds. And has no problem in lifting them." And Ed looked at her and he said, "You know, Judy, one of these days you'll figure out a way of doing it with your mind." And my wife, being very quick and having had the experience of lifting 100,000 eights, shot right back at Ed. "When you learn, please teach me." So we do get a lot of benefit and certainly a lot of joy out of bringing all of our material, not only the course, because we feel about all of our books the very same way, that we've been chosen to bring this material to our brothers and sisters and to share with them in any way we can. And it's a joyful way to go about your life. Yes.
I think it's very laudable of you to call your company Colin Graphics. Because you could very readily say Steinberg Graphics.
Well, it was Coleman when we started it, and certainly the I've never had any kind of problem in dealing with that. And one of the things that I've also learned to deal with through Course in Miracles is not only course ego, but Freudian ego as well. So that I have no compunction or hesitation about signing my name to anything I want to say or state. Nor do I make any bones about the fact of who I am or where I'm coming from. But certainly the name of the company is what it is, and as far as I'm concerned, that's what it'll stay until Spirit tells me differently. Yes?
Are there any plans to put the story in writing?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there is that plan on the drawing boards right now, and I'll relate another interesting story to you about just that. About 2 years ago, the people at the foundation recognized the importance of trying to get all this that we've been talking about today down in some written form, because people like ourselves want to know, where did all this come from? How did it all begin? How did it start? What were the people? Who were the people that were involved? And they did start to log and have been logging it now for several years. And quite recently, when I put my little story down on paper, I mailed the very first copies to the people at the foundation, and I got a call from Bob Scutch. And Bob called me and said, "Hey, Saul," he said, "I just read your little story." He says, "That isn't the way it happened." And I said, "What do you mean that's not the way it happened?" He said, "Well, Judy didn't tell it to me that way." And I said, "Well," I said, he says, "we've got it in a book a little bit different." And I said, "Well, you have to change the book, because that's the way it happened." And that is the way it happened. Yes. I asked that question of Ken just recently, and I'll share with you Ken's answer to me. Because Helen, I think of everyone on this earth, was closest to Helen and spent all those years, you know, with Helen all the time. I asked Ken just a few weeks ago, I says, "Ken, do you ever talk to Helen?" And Ken's answer to me was, "She makes her presence known." So that's the answer that he gave me. Yes.
there were 10 people involved starting this?
No, I don't know that that's so. No, the I don't know about 10 people. Did I say 10? Oh, no, the 7, 8, and 9 that I referred to were a vision that Judy Scutch had, that there would be 10 people coming to see her that day.
Oh, I see.
And we were, of course, number 7, 8, 9. What the first 6 were, I have no idea. But they must have thought, perhaps, that she was as screwy as I thought she was at that moment. Yes. I don't truly know. I don't keep track of time all that much, either in my life or certainly not in any of this, because I don't really focus on time. It's one of the things I've learned that has totally no importance or value. One of the things I used to do in my business life was really hinge on time and really be into dates and time, and I have to be here at a certain time or be out of there by a certain time. And I don't live that way anymore. So I don't really know with any kind of specificity the times involved. But I do know that I first came on the scene in 1975. And at that time, the course had been, again, in dictation some 6 years. So I'd have to guess that you're talking about the course coming through to Helen in the 1960s, the latter part of the 1960s, yes.
When did you actually start believing
that? When I started to believe in it. And that wasn't immediately by any means. We started with the lessons, I would guess, perhaps better than a year after I printed the books, because I just really didn't believe any of it. Even with all these quote miracles going on in my life, I really couldn't buy it. And it wasn't until that very day that I knew that it was coming out of someone other than Helen. For me, that was the Helen was indeed the validity of all this for me, no one else, because I truly observed Helen as much as I could and really questioned all that time, was this really something that she had dreamed up? And when I was convinced that it truly wasn't something that could have possibly come out of Helen, that was the day I started doing workbook lessons. And, of course, we also were instrumental, being that the foundation wanted not to be in any way organized or be thought of as a cult in any way. What happened, Paul Steinberg and I were riding up and down the Long Island Expressway one night, and Paul said, by God, he said, it'd be a great thing to start a group. And I said, well, let's do it. And he said, well, where would we meet? And I said, well, how about my office? And the very first Course in Miracles meeting in New York occurred that very week. And that group, which we call the Melville Group, was instrumental in bringing together probably close to 100 people, which then splintered into, I think, 17 other groups in the New York area. So we did get really actively involved. Yes, this lady, and then I'll take your question.
I'm just curious about groups versus individual involvement, and I don't know quite how to verbalize this.
Well, I understand your question, and if I may, allow me to answer that. There are many, many, many people who do the Course in Miracles on their own. There are also many, many people who need the support of a group, and neither one of them is in any way wrong or is in any way bad. I myself felt very strongly, being that I had all these doubts and all these fears and needed to learn my lessons, I felt rather quickly at that time, because I was kind of hinging on something and not quite sure. I felt the group would offer me a great deal of insight into what was really, you know, coming down. So that the group for me made a good deal of sense, and yet I know thousands of people who order the books individually and certainly don't have groups to meet with. To me, the group was a blessing, and I certainly feel strongly that group meetings are terrific. But that doesn't take away from the possibilities or the probabilities that many, many people can handle it on their own, and certainly do.
I have something else to say about, I want to ask you about the word miracle.
Mm-hmm. In the Course, a miracle is, of course, a correction.
A correction.
A correction of thought. So, a lot of people think that they're going to come in and we're going to lift this building, and indeed we could. And indeed we could, if we really wanted to, and if it made any sense at all, we really could do anything with Spirit's help. There is no task that we can't perform or do with Spirit's help. And without Spirit's help, we just can't do anything. Yes?
I know many people are in the process of setting goals, working goals, and I want to my own work. I set certain goals myself, and I just wondered in your business and your own personal life how you deal with that or how you work with that, if you do.
I set no goals. And I'll talk about that because it's a good question. You see, the way it works in business or in your personal life is to put your entire trust into Holy Spirit. Now, if you set a goal, that the first meaning in doing that would indicate to me, at least, that it's not already happening and that it's somewhere out there in the future. One of the key lines in the Course in Miracles is that you are entitled to miracles and that you are entitled to everything that's very beautiful in life. The thing that most of us don't recognize or realize is that it's already here. We already have it. We're just wearing blinders. So that when somebody talks to me about goals, that immediately connotates something off in the future, when in fact it's already here. We have the most beautiful life available to us right this moment. All we have to do is reach out and take it and know that we have it. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that it's here, it's now, it's immediate, it's beautiful, it's loving, it's peaceful, and it's fulfilling, and it's abundance. And what really gets into most people's heads are the fear, for whatever the reason, that they've done something and don't deserve. And that's what the Course goes about, to destroy that illusion. We are totally entitled to all this beauty and all this love. And it's only ourselves that are in the way. I said to Dan last night when we were talking that we have at our fingertips the most beautiful idea that has ever been presented to mankind.